Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
There you are.
Good morning, Brieflies, and good morning, Vachon, and the rest of the world who's tuning in to listen to our little radio station. Welcome to another episode of the Brown Briefly. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown, former Time magazine writer and editor, who set the tone for our progressive persuasion radio program as one of civil discourse, humor, integrity, and intellectual curiosity as we face another week of local, state, national, and global intrigue. Despite the threat of war on the Ukrainian border, the mega monster tornado storm that skipped across six states wreaking havoc, the rise of the new, oh my God, coronavirus variant here just in time for the holy days, and the continuing refusal of former White House officials to speak to the House committee investigating last year's January 6th insurrection. Wait, why couldn't they have shut up then, just now? Well, your intrepid team of news junkies has managed to get out of bed once again to air our various points of view on the puzzles before us. So with me in the Jean Bosch studio in bustling downtown Vachon is Truman O'Brien, captain of the airwaves. Through the magic of Zoom, from their island retreats are Bruce Hallman, historian and guardian of our galaxy, engineer activist Kevin Jones, and futurist author, teacher, Gail Kellner. Brieflies, how goes it? What you been up to here on Vachon?
Very into the coronavirus. you need to trademark that.
Don't you think? The minute I said that, my sister said that Omicron is an anagram of moronic, and that's all she's hearing from the right of center friends that she has down in Puyallup. So we'll leave it at that. But tell me how y'all doing, what you've been up to this week on Vachon.
Well, it's been an exciting week for J-Pod. They've been up and down the island all this week and part of last week. And today they just went by Port Robinson about 5-10 minutes ago. They're heading south down along the east shore of Maury Island. So if you don't have it, you should get onto Google the Vachon Orca alerts. You can get onto an alert system that will text you whenever the whales come around Vachon. And it's, if you have never been to Point Robinson to see them come in close and breach and roll and play around, it's just spectacular. So they're going to be here for a while. You know, it's peak salmon sort of time. So they're down here feeding. So take advantage when you can.
Wow. That's,
yeah, thank you for that, Bruce.
Go ahead, Gail. How about you? How have you been? What you been up to?
I'm doing well. I've actually been thinking a lot about the tornado that tornadoes, I'm not sure if you call it one or many, that skipped across the country there. And it made me think back to just a few weeks ago when I heard something and I described it to a friend. It sounded like there was a train coming at me. And I realize now and then, right after the fact, that was a tornado that was over, you know, our area, though it didn't ever touch down from what I understand. And it's just, it just is very sobering to see the kind of destruction that was wrought and that could happen here as well, that
exactly.
we're not immune from this, but no one is. And I know that there's a lot of researchers out there and it's important to do the due diligence of understanding causes, but it doesn't take a genius to see that there's likely a connection between warming climate and these kind of severe weather events.
Yeah, extreme events. It's shocking. And, you know, everybody's been saying what they say about gun shootings, you know, thoughts and prayers are with you. And personally, I'd like to see climate action and gun action, gun safety action. So that's what I would do in memory. Kevin, what you been up to? How are you?
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Well, today I'm striving for brilliance, but I'm going to commit only to adequacy today. Just thought I'd pass that out. I was up this morning at 4 o'clock with too many things on my mind, which means that basically there's a lot going on, which is usually a good thing for a white guy like me. But hey, we have our Christmas tree up. You know, we found the next Charlie Brown tree out in the forest around our home. And so it now is full-fledged with lighting and ornamentation. And it's thrilling the daylights out of us here at the Jones household. So I'm happy to be here today in the holiday spirit and looking forward to the conversation.
Well, welcome. Truman, hey. What about you?
Well, a couple of things. Talking about the tornadoes, I can remember as a kid living down in West Texas that a tornado touched down in San Angelo, which was fairly close to where I lived. And we actually drove down there a couple of days after. And two things that really just stuck with me. There was a telephone pole that had straw embedded in it lengthwise. I mean, it drove the straw into that telephone pole. I could not believe it. I mean, we were astounded. It was just amazing. And the other thing that was really amazing is that there was a piece of corrugated metal, you know, off of a roof that had hit a tree, and it wrapped around that tree so tightly that you could see the grain of the bark in that metal. I mean, it was that tightly wrapped around just mind-boggling. But speaking of forest, though, I do have to tell you that this week, the Vashon Forest Stewards, you know, they're made up of a bunch of old graybeards, I'm sorry to say. I was one of them for quite a while. And there's now a young bunch of guys. They're in their 30s. They're over in the old Cherry Creek Door factory. And they are starting to do all kinds of woodworking. I think a couple of them have real jobs, but they're also doing this. And over the weekend, using my big trailer, we moved all of the slabs and everything that the forest stewards had milled over the years over to their facility. And they're going to start milling over there. And they're going to start, sawing. You know, they're going to have a sawmill. They already have one there. And they're going to start milling and producing stuff from the forest stewards. So they're picking up the mantle and carrying on. And we're really, really excited about that.
Wow.
To see these young guys out there doing it. Yeah, Kevin.
Kevin, go.
I would love to know, Truman, if they have visions of the kiln on Vashon, because, you know, somebody has some wood that needs that kind of treatment.
You know, I would assume. I mean, you know, we built a kiln ourselves. I mean, the Forest Stewards had a kiln for quite a long while over there on 188th, or off of 188th. Mm-hmm. And they're not really that difficult to build. You need a reefer van or a reefer container. And you just put dehumidifiers and heaters and fans, and voila, you've got one. So I would encourage them to do that, and I would assume that they will.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, fabulous.
Yes, that would be great. A great service.
In lieu of being able to travel afar, I think I might just crawl in there.
Yeah, there you go.
Sounds heavenly, doesn't it?
Well, you know, Truman, you were talking about the tornadoes, and I've heard that it's well said, apparently, that it's not that the wind is blowing, it's what the wind is blowing.
That's absolutely true.
You have to be cautious about it. Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter just sent me a note and said, tell your Port Orchard story. A few years ago, you remember when they had the little tornado they touched down over in Port Orchard?
Right.
I was going over to my nephew's place. And on the way, I thought, well, I better stop and grab a bite to eat. So I stopped at the Taco Time there, had a bite to eat, and ran over to his place. And coming back, I see all these emergency vehicles. And then there are people out there directing traffic because there's no power. And I thought, what in the world's going on? Turned on the radio, and, oh, I just missed the tornado. It was, like, right next to me. Mm. And I didn't even know what was going on. So.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Truman, I'm going to ask you another question because I was reading the Seattle Times on the 13th, I guess it was, Monday, December 13th, and I saw something that made me think about you and the Vashon Airport.
Oh.
There was an article in there by Amy Zipkin from the New York Times on page A12 about airports around the country cultivating their unused space for solar farms.
Oh.
And trying to get, you know, some revenue back from that and some use out of that big flat piece of land and building surfaces. And the article went on to say that there were about 20% of airports around the country that have adopted solar power in the last decade, according to some study at the University of Colorado. So is that on the agenda for Vashon?
Well,
as you're the airport commissioner.
I am one of the three commissioners. You know, to be perfectly honest, we have not talked about that. We have talked about making improvements. In fact, they have, before I got there, made a number of improvements. But one of the issues that we have is we are very limited on space. And we have, because of the hangars that are there, the amount of impervious surface is high enough that we pay an exorbitant surface water management fee every year. I mean, it's huge, unbelievably huge. And so any space that we have, we would not want to, you know, cover it with more impervious surface, except that once you've talked about that, you know, mounting them on the hangars that are already there, we would not be increasing impervious surface space, but we would, have quite a bit more. And it is north and south aligned so that they could be put on the south exposure. So that's something to think about. I never really considered it, but we have a board meeting coming up here shortly. We'll talk about that.
Well, I'm going to leave this article with you, and
here it
is.
All right,
thank you.
That's
great. And then you have it documented right there.
Good. All right, thank you.
Great idea. I bet you could be fully endorsed by the Vashon Climate Action Group in taking that step.
I'm sure we could. Might even raise some money. Who knows?
Offset those fees.
Yeah, those swim fees.
It's a sustainable, it's a move in sustainability.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, Bruce, you may know something about this related to Australia, but in Tasmania, they're doing something called the Black Box Project. You may be aware of that, where they're actually gathering all of the information about what governments are doing, what people are doing, scraping the internet with keywords and recording how we respond to climate change in the event that it is actually an event that climate change itself is so catastrophic that humans won't have a record of how we actually didn't make it. So very interesting thing going on that way. So Truman, you're going to be on, you know, it's like Santa Claus's good list and bad list, I think.
Yeah, no kidding.
You get to be on the good list.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, speaking of climate change, I actually wanted to divert for a minute. Usually we try to kind of go local, state, national, you know, international, but there's a subject that I thought I would introduce. I don't know how far we'll get into it, but I'm holding up this insert to the Brieflies that came in the, I believe, Seattle Times early last week. And it was a very clever advertisement for this book that's coming out called Speed and Scale. And they have a website called speedandscale.com with a lot of authors like Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos and Mary Barra, who is the CEO of General Motors since 2014, and articles by Al Gore. It's edited by author John Doerr. And it's a very elaborate 10-point action plan for working on the climate crisis. And I just kind of wanted to get your opinions on some of these. What they do is, on the other side of the 10 talking points, there are action objectives for reaching the goals that they mentioned, but in broad terms, and then we'll kind of hear what of these you might want to talk about in a little bit more detail. I'm actually going to introduce it because it was the first thing that kind of engaged my mind and made me not really feel depressed and that we're all too late and we're not going to be able to do anything about the climate. And things that were just very simplistic or unrealistic, like change your light bulbs, you know, which always annoy me because they seem to avoid the big questions. So let me just tell you what these 10 talking points are. One, electrify transportation, all of it. Decarbonize the grid is number two. So all of our electric stuff should not come from fossil fuels. Number three is fix food. You know, the big agricultural practices and, you know, the methane that comes from big herds of cows, all of that, the way we package things. Number four was protect nature, was really looking at how we manage trees and soil and things like that to conserve carbon and keep it in the ground. Five was clean up industry. This was the one that I wanted to hear how they plan to do that. Number six is remove carbon. You know, apparently there are ways to pull carbon from the atmosphere. And then seven, eight, 9 and 10 are kind of what they call accelerants. They're points of action within the community. 7 is win politics and policy. There's another tough one. 8 is turn movements into action. So less marching in the streets, more focusing what we're doing on actual climate change processes. 9 is innovate and 10 is invest. So just let me ask, did y'all see any of these, this insert? Did you look at it? You know, do you have any thoughts about the big overarching scope of it before I go into any more detail? Gail.
Well, I can, yeah. I am aware that this book is just coming out. I've got it on order myself. It was just released this last month. And it looks very interesting. What particularly interested me about it is that it speaks to the kind of way Americans think, which is in terms of you make a goal, you set objectives, you reach them. And sometimes what happens in the climate change discussion, in my opinion, is that we look out there and we think, oh my God, you know, we're just overwhelmed by the enormity of the problem and how to even begin to address it. So I love seeing something like that come out. And I would just add for our listeners, another one that this has been out since about 2016. It's called Drawdown. And it's a comprehensive plan also proposed to reverse global warming. And it was edited by Paul Hawken. This has hundreds and hundreds of contributors from all over the world. Maybe some of the other Brieflies have seen this. It's an amazing book, very accessible. It lays it out in terms of by the things that we can do that'll have the most impact. And so there are things out there, and Bill Gates's book, I think some of you have certainly seen it, if not read it, How to Avoid a Climate Disaster. So I think that there are people at a high level who are out there thinking about these things, and government officials inside of the Biden administration that are working on these things. And I think that gives us, we should have some hope. And I'm excited to see this out there and put out in a form that most people can comprehend and digest and participate in. And I'll say one last thing, Lynn.
What's fascinating to me about this is it's really, it's a moment in time. And it's a moment in time in which, on a number of levels, our society is looking at the difference between the talk and the walk.
Exactly.
And sort of time to walk the talk. I mean, it's happened with Black Lives Matter and social justice. It's happened with...
Bruce. I think we lost you altogether. There you are.
Oh, I'm fading in and out. Sorry. Yeah. We're at a moment in time when it's, that sort of difference between the talk and the walk is coming to the forefront in terms of social justice, in terms of, you know, with Black Lives Matter, you know, in terms of the environment, in terms of land acknowledgments with Native people, you know, just right across the board, you know, with democracy. You know, are we going to have a democracy or are we going to have an autocracy?
Exactly.
And it's time for people to sort of put up or shut up. It's time to walk the talk. And you see that. And this is, you know, the climate is sort of the overriding piece of it. But all the others are sort of a coming together. It's a moment in time that we need to be very conscious of, because it's a time of revolution. It's a time of change, or sliding down the slope and going into oblivion.
In some ways, it's incredibly exciting that to live in a time like this where we have the opportunity and, you know, to make these changes and to rectify some long-term practices, policies, and attitudes that need to be righted. And I think there's reason for hope and positivity around that, too.
Yeah.
And I was just going to add, and I see Kevin says more, too. Large-scale things are done in terms of, you know, electrifying the grids. That's not something an individual can do, or changing building codes or things like that. It still is important. They estimate that approximately 26%, about 25% of what we can do about climate change is our own personal decision. It does matter if you put those LED lights in, and it does matter if you eat mostly a plant-based diet. There are things every single one of us can do every single day that matter.
Thank you. Kevin, what were you going to say?
Boy, oh boy. wonderful list, and I'm so glad, Lynn, that you brought this up. You know, speaking of light bulbs, I did the calculation. Our wood stove is designed to heat our home when the power goes out. The equivalent, it's like 39,000 BTUs or something. The equivalent is 165 100-watt light bulbs. Hmm. 165. Lighting is one of the amazingly significant but under-considered consumers of electrical energy. And LED lighting is revolutionizing that demand. So yes. That's why we can have population growth and expansion, and our load on the electric utilities is actually declining. So that's those kind of technologies.
Kevin, can I ask you a quick question before you go on? Did you put up LED lights on your Christmas tree?
We have LED lights on the house and the Christmas tree.
I already kind of knew the answer. Yay!
Absolutely. I need to put them in the front of the truck now that has those old halogen lights in the front of it. But that's, you know, that's a whole different thing. The list is great. Decarbonizing the grid, that for us in Washington means the Clean Energy Transformation Act, which will get us to 100% clean energy by the year 2045, assuming our utilities make the pace, make the grade, make the schedule. We want them to move and move fast. Green hydrogen, Vashon Climate Action Group, Hydrogen Alliance. And I'm hearing an uh-oh, because I think occasionally we're dropping out.
We are.
I think it might be at the studio, because I hear an uh-oh, and I see Bruce and Gail and I are still moving around when that happens. Green hydrogen, the Renewable Hydrogen Alliance, retired research scientist at the National Science Labs, I believe, Rob Briggs, encouraged us to join the Hydrogen Alliance, and they're looking at that pathway forward. When you have a lot of free energy from solar panels in California on, you know, 14 hours of sunlight, they have to give away that electricity or pay somebody to take it. And if you can then take that and put it through an electrolysis process, which is a high demand energy but creates hydrogen, that's a storable energy source. That can get you through the wintertime if you have the right storage. So amazing technologies. I will say one thing that I did note was missing.
Yeah, and you know, by no means should this be an exhaustive list. Go ahead, Kevin.
Absolutely, I understand. Our second largest climate pollution source locally is from buildings, and it's our fastest growing source of climate pollution. Mm. So it turns out that on Monday, December 20th, 7 p.m., on the agenda for the Vashon Maury Island
Community Council, perhaps.
Yes, yes.
He's... Now and then you cut out, Kevin, so we're just going to talk Building over codes. You and keep hope you keep and, going.
Okay. Those upgraded building codes would take a step in the direction of reducing carbon pollution from commercial and large multifamily residential. It's on the agenda. If you care about the climate, it is important to show up 7 p.m. December 20th. I will warn you.
Oh.
I'm really sorry, folks. I need to tell you real quick a little technical issue here. We have
desperately needed.
We have recently converted to a Comcast, our own Comcast line here, and that we're still working out a few bugs. So I suspect that this cutting in and out is one of the issues that we're going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
But I apologize in advance for this, but.
What we see is your face freeze and, you know, your audio goes out. So I haven't known which end it's been on, but just this last time, a little tag came up that said your internet is unstable for us. So it may be
it's probably from us that's doing that. Yeah. Sorry.
Yes, it
and,
is.
And Kevin, I missed the title of the, just a minute, Gail. I missed the title of the meeting, or you cut out from my end when you said the Vashon community, and I didn't know if you meant council or what. What were you talking about?
It is our own. It is our own Vashon Maury Island Community Council.
There we go.
December 20th, 7 p.m. If you go to the vmicc.net webpage and go to our next meeting, you'll find the Zoom link, and you can join by Zoom or by phone. And I encourage those climate advocates to get on to the meeting and support this motion, and let's send a clear message to our King County elected governance that Vashon cares about the climate and Vashon cares about making buildings better.
Yeah. Gail, did you want to finish?
Oh, I was just going to make a smart alecky remark that we keep cutting out, the three of us, Bruce and I, Kevin, the three of us will continue on.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're having a good time here.
I have a button over here, to be perfectly honest. I'm cutting you guys out. Uh-oh. No, I'm kidding.
Well,
you know, I suspected that all along.
Yeah.
I just want to mention the piece that kind of got my attention under Decarbonize the Grid was under one of their objectives to do that. It suggested that we build no new coal.
The radio's
gas.
Still working, though.
You guys are frozen.
Yeah.
Oh,
we're frozen.
Are we frozen now?
Not now.
Oh, okay.
Oh, geez. My gosh.
Oh, geez.
I think we should just carry on, just like a performance. You know how they say. The
well, we do, and we will.
Yeah, we will. Hey, I have one quick question.
Hey, Truman, I had a quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that the same button that you cut out the engine on your airplane?
Yeah. No, that's a different button. Yeah. That's the Energizer button.
It says,
button.
Do not press.
Do not touch, or whatever you do. Yeah. It's the seat eject, you know. No, Well, my question is on the building codes. Is there, and perhaps this is, you know, we're getting into the federal here, but will there be subsidies for converting from electric heat to heat pumps, or is there anything in the works for that?
Well, thanks for asking that question. I'll clarify. The building codes apply for new construction.
Oh, okay.
Commercial buildings and multi five or more stories, multifamily residential in unincorporated King County.
Okay.
So we're not replacing anybody's use of gas at this point, but it does call for space and water heating using heat pumps. What that means is you get heating and cooling for your space heating for when the heat domes come along. Right, you will be safer. And if the contractor chooses to put in gas piping for things like dryers or cooktops, they're also obliged to put in an electrical outlet so that a future resident can easily switch over to an electric appliance. So I think it's forward looking and certainly removes the incentive to create more gas infrastructure, which just creates more demand on fracked gas and all of the consequences that go along with them.
Yeah. In this particular schema, it did mention financial incentives to increase global government subsidies and support for clean energy and to raise that from $128 billion to $600 billion. And, you know, I think in particular about electrifying cars and making sure we're building enough charging stations and those kinds of things that, you know, are going to be costly to consumers and to the infrastructure. So you're right, we got to put some money toward it. Go ahead.
I will say that in Dow Constantine's budget, which I don't know if it's been accepted, he had some money for urban centers replacement of like oil burning furnaces, and urban meaning like White Center Skyway. In the meeting that I was in where that was unveiled, I said, what about Vashon? And he said, like, well, you know, we got to start someplace and Vashon's not the place. That doesn't mean that that isn't part of a future plan. And I do hope that Dow's budget with that provision goes forward and that we see the benefits of it so that we can then maybe have that same advantage here on the islands.
You know, personally, I'm glad to see them start with White Center because it seems that communities of color and very diverse communities have really old buildings and not enough money to be able to upgrade themselves, and I'd be proud if we did that, you know, came in and supported them. I was an
early.
That is direct
funding, you know, yeah. Incentive funding, you know, to do those retrofits. So
yeah, I was an early direct beneficiary of early Seattle. I guess it was efforts to insulate those old mill houses in Ballard. So I got free insulation, but boy, that sure made a difference to my heating bills and to the energy, you know, that I expended in my wood stove. You know, when I think of, you know, all the little wood stove fires that were around, that really helped me and the air quality.
You know, if you think about the housing stock we have, the commercial as well as you know, residential housing stock, and the amount of savings that is possible, the amount of job potential that's just in that segment of our energy economy, it's gigantic. It'll put lots of people into really good, skilled jobs. I mean, I'm doing some remodeling around the house. I'm realizing how skilled a carpenter has to be and how unskilled I am in some cases. These are really good, opportunities for a workforce,
right,
to be really dedicated to this outcome and to learn a lot of skills along the way that are very marketable.
Well, I have another question for the team here, because my other thought is I was looking over all of the excellent ideas in here and listening to, you know, the resources that you have and know about are happening. In particular with this book, you know, I read it as, man, this is a wonderful set of ideas from the private sector mostly. And it made me think, you know, how difficult it has been to get anything through our governmental system recently, and really trying to think, how do we approach the idea of all of this clean energy that we need and the ending of using fossil fuels, all of that. How do we help mobilize the government so that we take these ideas from ideas into government policy?
Well, Truman. One of the things that I've said all along is that none of this is going to work unless it's economically feasible for the individual. I mean, for the company or for the person. I mean, why would I go out and spend, you know, $5,000 to change the heating system in my house unless I was going to get a benefit from that? So that benefit, that economic benefit, may not come directly from the cost savings that I, you know, that I get, but maybe it's in the form of a government subsidy. So I'm just saying, I don't think this will happen unless there's an economic driver driving it. So.
I agree with you, Truman, and I think that is so important, and we need to put that kind of thing in place where it makes economic sense for individuals and companies to make these changes that we need to make. I do also think that the other thing we can do, Lynn, that can help drive government policy, though, and individual decisions, is understanding that we have a bigger responsibility that goes beyond our pocket, that we have a responsibility to the earth itself, to our fellow citizens that are being ravaged by things like tornadoes and wildfires and heat domes, that we have a responsibility to all of the other life on earth, plants and animals, not to take this down, all the way down. And that I think that people have, if they understand that there is an underlying goodness in people that cares about these things, and I think that we can make it just like we had campaigns not to litter. And remember those? Mm-hmm. those touched all of us. We can have campaigns that not only touch our pocketbooks, that is in combination, the way forward.
I'd also like to comment, Truman. I don't disagree with the point you're making. Economics drives a lot, and it should not be underestimated. It's intriguing to me that something called the levelized cost of energy, which is now like the utilities when they say, am I going to build a gas plant or am I going to go with solar or wind? Levelized cost of energy for renewable resources is now lower and fairly much lower than the fossil fuel infrastructure of the past. And so, in other words, that's where the lower costs are going to be when it comes to, heating your home and heating your water. And the idea that, I believe that natural gas prices are now up, for example, and we all know the price instability of fossil fuels in the past. The other thing I'll mention, and I don't know how many people are thinking along these lines, but I believe that it won't be very long before, when you want to sell your home, some shoppers are going to maybe turn away from a fossil fuel-based heating system in a home and prefer an electric heating system with a heat pump. So eventually, it's going to be a market trade on a lot of different dimensions, I believe, including that factor.
Yeah. Before I jump back in, maybe Bruce wants to add something here. I would just add that, I think it's important to remember that as a community of people, as a government, is right now subsidizing fossil fuel use incredibly. And so in those fossil fuel subsidies, and you would see that change happen very rapidly because it's being held up by the very thing you're talking about, Truman. It's being held up by the fact that it's profitable to pull and, gas and oil out of the ground right now. It's profitable to do that. It's only profitable to do that for those companies because of the subsidies that we are giving them.
Mm-hmm. Just one example of that. The house I'm in has a 500 gallon propane tank outside and has a cooktop, a dryer, a hot water heater, and used to have a furnace on that system. The furnace is now an electric heat pump. We're noticing our propane use is increasing. And so just a $200 expense to have somebody come out and check for leaks in the system. Those are the kind of, and the concern about, do we have a leak, and what's going to happen to the house if there is one? so many considerations, right? But so many of those considerations, I think these days, are pointing to electrification, more efficient housing, lowering costs, and lowering the impact on the climate and the environment. And I think it's a trend that needs to grow, and I hope to do my best to encourage it.
There you go. True.
So one of the things that you mentioned earlier about the using solar and being able to crack the water into hydrogen and producing hydrogen with the excess, I've said for a long, long time, the next revolution is going in technology is going to be energy storage. And right now the energy storage of electricity is pretty much non-existent. I mean, you either use it or lose it. It's not so batteries, capacitors, that sort of thing. But converting it to hydrogen, there's a renewable source. I mean, an unbelievable amount of that's available in the atmosphere. It could be used, and that is moving toward that energy storage for electricity.
Kevin?
Absolutely. You know, and hydrogen combined with carbon in different molecular arrangements, that is our benzene and our propane and all of the other fuels that we use. So hydrogen is a usable power source on its own in a hydrogen fuel cell, but also can create some of those other products which are used by industry and may have a hard time converting to direct hydrogen use, for example. Sure. So tremendous opportunities there.
Well, it's a fascinating subject, you know, and I'm thrilled to hear how much is all going to happen and, you know, is being developed. I continue to be distressed about the state of our government. And in particular, you know, I was reading that Biden's Build Back Better bill would gain for us $557 billion over 10 years. And that's by taxing all those offshore accounts and kind of plugging loopholes in our tax system for the wealthy and really asking the wealthy people, I mean, super wealthy, it's not, you know, people who have saved $1 million for their retirement. We're talking about super wealthy people here. To kind of get rid of those tax shelters and the way our taxing system allows them to shelter some of their wealth. And I was reading that John Tester, who is a Democrat from Montana, actually had refused to support the Biden bill until its funding sources were detailed. And when it has come out that, you know, it really has to do with rearranging our tax system, he made the point that he disagreed with taxing the rich and says, how can we do that without their consent? And, you know, I just am very curious. You know, Bruce, I've heard you speak to this before. And Kevin, I see your hand up. But, you know, do we have the power to for a president in office to say this is the way it's going to be? Or is it all a negotiated system between the banks and the economics? What do you think? Kevin, go ahead.
Well, that's a great question, and I'll invite Bruce to answer that. But in this book, Nancy McLean, Democracy in Chains, the notion of consent about taxation is what's behind the words economic freedom. And that sounds innocent on the benefits on the top, something we'd all love to have. But here's what it means to the libertarians who espouse economic freedom. The notion that tax policy ought to be arrived at through unanimous consent, it would seem to be a blatant injustice if someone should be forced to contribute toward the cost of some activity which does not further his interests or may even be diametrically opposed to them. Now, that's some language that was found by a German author and was incorporated into the notion of economic freedom. And not that we don't like to pay taxes for things that don't benefit us directly, and that is part of our policy. But what was meant here is unanimous consent, meaning don't tax me. I can veto the notion that you're going to tax me if I'm a billionaire.
And so are you saying that that is a spurious argument and that for any commonwealth, you know, where we're supposed to provide for the general welfare, you know, we should have more ability to call out the need for taxes wherever we can find it?
Well, the thing that struck me is that Democrat John Tester of Montana is now echoing conservative far right doctrine that's funded by decades of Koch brother money to try to put billionaires into a position where they can set the rules and basically set the governing taxation policy for the country. And that's what is disturbing, that Democrat John Tester would be using that kind of
language. Got it. Yes. And Gail?
Well, democracy with a small d is based on the idea that we tax ourselves, that we govern ourselves, that we decide together, and that that's done by the majority, not by a group of wealthy people at the top agreeing or not agreeing to pay.
There you go.
So I think that the consent to be taxed is the process we call voting.
There you go.
representatives. So
yeah. All right. And, yes, and
you have every authority to tax
our
corporations and richer.
Our tax system is supposedly voluntary. And the reason it's voluntary is because we vote.
There you go.
For those people who support our.
So please, everybody, turn out. Don't think the midterm elections are about nothing. They're about everything. So we're beginning to hear the sound of the foghorns and as our ship leaves the shore. Thank you all. See you next week.
The home.